Hello and welcome to the Personnel Today Friday podcast. I'm Tara Craig and I'm joined by Noel O'Reilly, editor of Occupational Health magazine. Coming up, we hear about the new standards for occupational health providers launched this week. We look at their implications for HR and we consider what employers need to look for in an occupational health provider. But first, the news. New research has found that a highly people-centred approach, rather than a focus on numbers or targets, is more likely to result in outstanding performance. The findings were the result of a two-year-long study by the Work Foundation. The pension deficit for local councils in England and Wales could have reached £60 billion, more than double the level 3 years ago, the Liberal Democrats have warned. Using the Freedom of Information Act, Lib Dem pension spokesman Steve Webb found that 83 of 87 local authorities were in deficit at their last official valuation in 2007. Fatism is alive and kicking in the workplace, according to new research. A poll by Slimming World and YouGov has revealed that larger people are missing out on jobs because bosses assume they are lazy and lack self-control. You can read these and other news stories in full on personneltoday.com. Noel, we've just seen the formal launch of new standards for occupational health providers. Why are these necessary?
This has really stemmed from something the government initiated. Some of the listeners might remember Dame Carol Black's review of Work and Health, and one of the recommendations was that they should try to have some sort of accreditation for organisations and individuals that are providing occupational health services. Now, the problem is that there's a rather varied standard of service at the moment, some very good and some not so good at all. And the other problem is that quite a lot of people aren't really working to any kind of evidence base, so what they're doing may not actually be effective.
And what do the standards cover, Noel?
Well, they cover a range of things. For example, business probity, which is actually very important in this area because a lot of the smaller occupational health services actually don't run their businesses very well. They're actually losing money. The last thing you want if you're an HR department hiring an OH service is to find that they've gone out of business halfway through the contract or that they're unable to provide the service because of funding reasons. So financial propriety and conducting the business with integrity and conducting the business well is one of the standards. Another is what they call information governance. Now, this is all to do with maintaining adequate records. So when someone gets referred to them about something, a problem at work, that they keep a record of it, and that record isn't lost, and that it's easy to access it. Another area is about the people that they employ, making sure that they've got the right qualifications and so on, the facilities and equipment in their own offices. And another one is about the relationship they have with the person who's, or the employer who's purchasing the service, which is very often HR, of course, and to ensure that they provide customers with the right numbers of staff and the skills mix and so on, and the right equipment to provide the services. And then there's relationships with employees, which is the last one, and that's to ensure that workers are treated fairly and respected.
Who actually drew these up?
The standards were drawn up by an organisation called the Faculty of Occupational Medicine. Now, that's a doctor's body. They're the sort of people that if somebody's ill at work and they go and see a doctor, a physician, they'll more than likely be a member of the Faculty of Occupational Medicine. And they got input also from occupational health nurses, from the commercial providers, the big occupational health service providers, from employers, from the government and from unions.
And they've been published a full year ahead of the new accreditation scheme. Why is that?
Well, I'm tempted to say, Tara, that it's partly to show that they're actually doing something and getting somewhere with it. But the rationale is that people can actually get used to them. So, for example, if you're providing an occupational health service, you can look at this and you can actually raise your game and get ready for when the accreditation starts. Now, the important thing and the thing which really will benefit HR people is when in a year's time they launch an accreditation service for this. It'll be voluntary accreditation, but of course once you're actually thinking about buying in some occupational health support, you will be able to tell whether they have this kite mark, so that will be important. And during the next year, employers and people providing occupational health services can really get their head round what it is that the services should be providing and the standards that they should be meeting. And for a lot of people, a lot of HR people don't necessarily know what their own requirements are, so it might actually improve their focus on what they really need.
Do you foresee any wider implications for the OH market? Are we going to see smaller companies being forced out of business?
Well, I think one of the things that might happen is that smaller companies who can't meet these standards will be forced out of business. But to be honest, the last thing we want is people providing services which could put employees at risk or which are really not providing value to employers. So if you look at it in a positive way, it's going to make sure that people do raise their game and become competitive. So it's good for them, it's good for the OH service providers that they actually become more business focused and are competitive, because they'll stay in business. Nobody goes into business to lose money.
And presumably the introduction of both the standards and the accreditation will make life easier for HR departments.
Yes, it will, because they will have this kite mark. So they, there are some cowboys out there as well. So they will know that of the people who tender, they will know that they have at least reached minimum standards. It will also draw attention to providers and to other people about the evidence base for what actually works. And that's another real drive at the moment, to get people to use evidence-based practice. And of course, in the long run, it will help because it will cut absence and potentially raise productivity in companies if they've got healthier staff.
Finally, what should an employer be looking for in an occupational healthcare provider?
Well, the great thing about these standards is that if you read them through, and you can download them from the Faculty of Occupational Medicine site, you will be able to find out for yourself. But some of the basic things that you can look at is that, first of all, they should be able to run their business. Secondly, that they work to evidence-based standards. That they have adequate record keeping, so when they see somebody, you are able to see the notes that are relevant to you. And of course, that they actually have the staff, so that people aren't waiting ages after they've been referred to occupational health, for example. Whether these staff are actually directly employed by the service or they're contracted out, they need to be able to demonstrate that they will actually have people on the ground to do the job.
Thanks, Noel. Well, that's it from this week's podcast. Thank you for listening. Remember to go online to check the latest news and views from the HR community at hrspace.co.uk. That's hrspace.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.